thought process on bringing in Revis, and what do you think he brings to the team?
I think he'll help our team.
What would you like about him?
He's a good player. He does a lot of things well. Look forward to working with him. We try to keep tabs on all the players. We know the ones that are potentially UFAs going into the process. We know guys that we are potentially non-tendered players. Some of those guys get signed back. Some of them get tendered. Some guys we think are going to get tendered don't get tendered. So, you know, there's a little bit of movement there at the end. And then some players get released. And we thought he was a potential release, but we didn't know that. They was in a contract, they could have kept him. But they didn't. So when they didn't, then that's the process. Yeah, you never know exactly how free he's going to go. So there's always twists and turns. And so there was some in that process. Mm-hmm. No question.
John Elway characterized it as an arms race between the Broncos and the Patriots. Would you characterize it the same way?
We're just trying to improve our team.
Bill, Reeves said that he sat down and talked to you about a couple of years ago, and you know, you're unflattering me, and you kind of worked things out in the past.
Any conversations between myself and players or between us?
How important was it to bring back Julian?
I'm glad we were able to work things out with Julian. And you know, it's been an ongoing process, but glad it was resolved. And I think he's you know, a good player. He's versatile. He does a lot of different things for us. Works hard. He's tough. And he's developed all the way through our system. You know, he came in not as a receiver, not as a punt returner. He's developed into being pretty good at both those things. So we're glad to be able to keep him. We'll see how it all comes together. You know, he was a productive player at Carolina. And a guy who had some skills that we liked when he was coming out of LSU. So, we'll see how it goes. I mean, we see all their games. We evaluate every player, what they do. And we obviously felt he was a good player, and that's why we signed him. Feel like he can help our team. Yeah, it's a rare size for a corner. Yeah. You know, we'll just have to see players that we have that we haven't worked with. We'll just have to see how it all comes together with them. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of things that we like about them, but we wouldn't sign them. Which is the same thing when we draft a player. If we haven't worked with them, we'll have to put it together and see how it comes together with that player and our team. But that's a process we just have to go through. Obviously, there's things we like, or we wouldn't sign them.
Bill, when you get a guy like Revis, you know, obviously you play him twice a year, do you look across the field and go, you know, if we ever got him, like, do you have an idea in your head, like, if we ever got him, we would do this with him? Or do you ever kind of let yourself do that when you're playing, see guys that often?
Just like I said, Darrell's a good player. We'll see how it comes together with us, what his role is, and how exactly he fits into our scheme and so forth. We'll just have to see how that comes together. I mean, I don't know.
Bill, you've had some changes on the staff, specific to Dante no longer being with the team. I mean, 30 years in the Patriots. How do you feel that transition is going at this point from Dante to Dave?
I mean, like Dave, you know, he has some familiarity with our system. He's done a good job. Glad we have him. Dante did a great job for us as well. It's a little different not having him around, but this is the first time we've lost a staff member. I'm sure it won't be the last.
With Dave's background in the system, is that similar to when he was with Sperano and Ryan in Miami?
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Is Brian working closely with him in terms of the transition?
And hopefully our entire coaching staff is working closely together. I hope we are. That's what we're trying to do.
It's meant more like coordinating with the run game. If Brian was doing like more tight end work, you know, which aligns with Dave and the line.
But they all... Like, hopefully they're all working together. I mean, everything's connected to everything. The center's connected to the quarterback, and it's connected to the receiver. I mean, it's all, they're all connected in some way, so it all needs to work together and connect together somehow. Hopefully that's what's happening.
We know things have gotten a little contentious with Vince and the team. Where do things stand with them right now? How much do you
I don't really know what, you know, the nature of your question. Maybe that's something you have to talk to Vince about. I'm not gonna talk about anything with any of our specific players. You know, I'm not gonna get into that.
You've submitted four rules proposals here at the meetings. Why was that important for you specifically some of
these rules? Those all four things are things that I've brought up to the competition committee in previous years. It's never been put in front of the membership, and this year it's probably put in front of the membership, and we'll see how they feel about those things. And whatever the league and the membership decides to do, obviously we'll do. But put it in front of everybody and see if there's any feeling for it one way or the other. I think a lot of the things that that we propose are concepts, not married to a specific proposal per se. It could definitely be amended, but I think the concept of, you know, having a competitive extra point instead of having one that's over 99.5% successful, is, I don't think that's a competitive play. Certainly think the goalposts, though, that's outdated. Virtually every kicker at the combine can kick them over the top of the goalposts. So some of those guys aren't even going to be in the league, but I mean, I'd say every kicker can do that. Camera idea, we've been talking about that for years, but that's never been formally discussed by the membership. So, things like that.
Probably a better question for the membership. Do you have any sense as to why this year it finally was put up?
Because we submitted it, that's why.
Okay. So you talked about it, but this was the first time you...
Right, I brought it up as suggestions. That, you know, like every team does, they can present suggestions to the competition committee, and then the competition committee submits their report, and they have their proposals in there. But after a long period of time and never seen it officially proposed, we just felt organizationally that it was time to put those proposals in front of the membership and have a discussion about it. If there's any feeling for it, then fine. If there's not, then that's fine too. Like I said, we're not
Bill, you've typically said the rules are the rules, we'll just play by the rules, and now it sounds like the idea is to be more proactive on it. Why not?
You're putting words in my mouth. I never said that. I just explained it.
But I'm just saying, a lot of times when we ask you about NFL policies...
Jared, I just explained the whole process that we went through. So... I don't need to add to it. I just went through it.
Is this the first time, though, that you put proposals together for... I mean, I know you've talked about it, but I just can't remember them.
It's good to know that your memory's no better than mine is, then. That's good.
Probably not good for me.
I don't know.
You've mentioned it.
Shout out to Billy here. Go to the Sweet 16.
Where are you guys at currently in the process of recruitment, player evaluation, etc.?
I'd say we're about where we normally are at this time of year. The draft schedule hasn't changed from the combine to now. Obviously, the draft is later, but I'd say from whenever the combine was there, the 23rd to the 20th, whatever those dates were, until whatever today is, the 24th, something like that. I'd say that process has been about the same. Yeah, I mean, I think we're still, and I'm still compiling it. You know, when we get back to Foxborough, you know, all the coaches are out, all the scouts are out. When everybody comes back in early and mid-April, then all that information will be, you know, pulled together and added to what we had going out back in February, and we'll see where all that comes in. I don't know. Right now, it's just a lot of parcels. You know, I've been where I've been. Everybody else has been where they've been. At some point, it'll all, you know, get pulled back together. Talk about the way we have the players on the board. I'm sure we'll make some changes and adjustments, and then we'll continue the process from there. But I wouldn't say it's any different now than what it's been at this time of year in previous years.
Phil, do you feel any more of a sense of urgency because of Tom's age? You know, to surround and make sure you surround. I know you're always trying to get the best players you can, but does that create another factor in
this? We try to have a competitive team every year.
Bill, when a guy like Vince Wilfork asks for his release, a guy who has been such an accomplished player for you for so many years, and killer, how do you process that?
If you have any questions about Vince, you should ask Vince. Or anybody else, any other players, you should talk to those players.
But the fact that he has asked for a release, I mean, obviously you haven't done that. Where do you go from here? Do you want to still have him as part of the team and work out some type of resolution where it's more of a long-term commitment?
You need to talk to him about any of those statements, which I think you should verify first.
I keep believing Brandon Spikes was sent with Adrian falsified injury reports during the season.
I don't agree with that. No, never.
Bill, when you look at free agency, it seems like a lot of times when any team, signs a guy, there's a lot of buzz. But when you look back years later, an awful lot of guys don't pan out. What are the challenges in making free agency work for your team?
I mean, everybody's putting together a team. Look, you bring in 80, 90 guys and go to a 53-man roster, I mean, there's a lot of players that you bring in. There's 37 players that you bring in that aren't going to be on your roster in some form or fashion, however they get there. So I think that's part of the process.
You've talked, I know, in the past about the extra point issue being non-competitive for a while, and you brought it up. Mm-hmm. In the past, I know the proposal you guys have on the table would be like a 43-yard extra point.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that seems to have bubbled up as an issue league-wide now? I mean, do you just think it's reached he's at a 99.9% play. It's just strenuous.
I think there were other people that voiced a similar opinion to mine, but again, there was no proposal from the competition committee for years. I mean, it's been two decades, and the extra point conversion percentage is over 98%. Six of the last nine years, it's been over 99%. In the last decade, there hasn't been a field goal under 20 yards that's been missed in 10 years. So, you know, when the extra point was part of the game originally, you know, we had players who played another position or kicking. The surfaces were a lot less ideal than what they are now. It was a tougher play. Now we've made it a non-play. And I don't think non-plays are good for the game. Just like I don't think putting the ball on a 40-yard line and kicking it to the end zone, or even putting it on 35 and having an over 50% touchback rate, I don't think that's an exciting play. I can't imagine the fans are, you know, waiting to see a 99% extra point and then a over 50% touchback play. I personally don't think that's great for the game. So.
But you don't want to eliminate that one.
No, I never said that. Never. I just think it should be a competitive play. And the way we've legislated the field goal rushes, it's almost impossible to block a kick. I mean, you can't overload, you can't hit the center, you can't jump, you can't land on anybody. I mean, unless the kicker just misses it, or it's an incredibly horrendous protection by the offensive line, it's a non-competitive play. I don't understand what's so great about that, so I'd just like to see it more competitive. And I'd certainly be open to any other suggestions of making a more competitive play. Like if you were allowed to block it, that would make it more competitive. But, you know, it's a non-competitive play, as are the touchbacks. Now, you know, the guy is a great kicker and makes a great kick and touchbacks it, then, you know, I have no problem with that. But when over half the league is touchbacking on a consistent basis, I mean, I'm not sure what – I don't see what's so great about that. So I think we should reevaluate those type of things.
Do you sense any momentum at all or from the discussions you guys have had?
We'll see what the membership wants to do. I don't – if nobody wants to do it, then we'll leave it the way it is. No problem. I just personally, and organizationally, we feel differently. But if we're outliers, then that's fine. And if there's other support for it, then fine. It's the same thing with field goals. I mean, why? Like, I don't have a percentage, but I'm telling you, any kick that's not, you know, inside the 10-yard line or outside the 45-yard line goes over the top of the uprights. I mean, they all do. Like I said, even the guys at the combine who aren't even in the league, that's where the balls travel. So to make the officials have to make that judgment of whether it is or isn't, and the angle and all that, I mean, I think we should try to take that judgment out of the game if we can and get it right. Just like, as a coach, when you make a challenge on a sideline play or an end line play or a goal line play, I think there should be a camera there that at least you know in your challenge that there's a look at it that is a decent look. So, that's... You know, we just spent like whatever it was, however many million dollars on a replay system. I mean, there's 1,000 cameras in every stadium so that if somebody spills a beer on somebody, we have it on record, right? Maybe we could have a bake sale. Raise some money for the cameras. We do a car wash.
Along the lines of like the rule changes and different stuff that's being discussed here, has anything come up on expanding the playoffs? And if so, what is your personal opinion?
We heard a proposal on it yesterday.
What do you think?
I don't know. 50%? I mean, I think it's a lot of There's a lot of things that need to be worked out. I really haven't given it probably enough thought. I mean, the proposal that we heard yesterday, I think, is still not finalized. So, probably some questions that need to be answered relative to the whole process. So, I don't know.
Bill, the one proposal about expanding the plays that could be reviewable under replay to cover anything. I understand the premise of that, but with that, wouldn't you also have to have more challenges for coaches?
Well, I'm not proposing more challenges. All I'm saying is, as a coach, if you want to challenge a play, I think you should be able to challenge it. And why does it have to be limited to, it's 4 or 5 pages in the rules book of plays that can be challenged. And now this year there are more proposals to amend that, probably because of 1 or 2 plays that happened in the league last year. And I think eventually each year there's going to be some other situation, circumstance that comes up, and then we're going to want to add that. I mean, it's 4 to 5 pages of plays that the challenge procedure, and every year it gets amended, and it's hard to keep it straight. I mean, I can't get it right. We have a coach that's responsible for that on game day to know exactly. I mean, I don't know how the fans could possibly get it right. Coaches can't get it right, and the officials themselves are, it's challenging. I think it simplifies it, and I understand it's a judgment call. So if I throw a challenge on an offensive holding play and they look at it, I mean, and it's judgment, and they don't think it's holding, then I lose the challenge. But it's an egregious play. I don't see why it should not be challenged, not be allowed to be challenged, when it affects the outcome of the game. And I think we can find multiple examples of plays, for example, where the offense isn't set, that were challenged, that the officials would look at it, and I think it's very clear that they're not set, and that would nullify whatever subsequently happened, which I'd say I can think of many situations where that would have affected the outcome of the game. So why plays like that can't be challenged, or why other plays can't be challenged, I think is, if we fundamentally want to try to get the games right and get the plays right, then I don't see why they should be excluded, even though they're judgment calls. But if you're willing to use a timeout on that, then I think you should be able to do that. It's not going to slow the game down. It's no different than if you challenge another play. So I'm not looking for more challenges or anything else. I just think if you think it was a call that was missed, that you should have the opportunity to have the officials review it. That's all. I don't know if anybody agrees with that or not, but that's the proposal.
Considering the history of how replay has kind of been established in the league, where changes have been incremental, and like you said, so many amendments, is it realistic to think that proposal is going to gain?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But there's a proposal in there from the competition committee that's like a page and a half long about, you know, amending the fumble recovery in the field of play and all that. I mean, it's hard to understand, you know, all these circumstances that have to be in place on the challenge process. It's extensive.
The idea of New York having some sort of consultation with the officials that are on the field, or as a coach, do you prefer to have?
It's not really my field, so I mean, I think that Dean and his staff, they feel that that's a more efficient way to do it, and I'm not going to argue with it. I'm for getting it right. I'm for, you know, having the officials who have a very hard job to do be able to do their job. Well, if that is part of it, then I have no problem with it. I mean, roster expansion's always a, you know, it's a two-sided argument, and I think there's, you know, merits on both sides of it. Certainly I can see the merit for a larger roster size. Talking about game day? Right. And then the negative is just the specialization of, you know, we have a long field goal kicker, we have a short field goal kicker, we have a punt snapper, we have a field goal snapper, we have, you know, five tight end offense, and then we have, you know, six linebacker defense to match the five tight end offense. You know, it just, the more specialization just leads to more specialization. You know, there was a time when you watched the National Football League and you saw 11 players out there, basically the same players on every play. And you recognize those players, and, you know, now a lot of times you see four or five players run onto the field, and then four or five players run on the field for the other team. I don't know. It's just, it's different, you know. So if you want more of that, if you want more specialization, more guys running on the field, you know, one guy to punt on the plus 50, another guy to punt on the backed up 50, if that's, you know, you're going to get some of that. I mean, there's going to be some specialization that, you know, comes with that. And if that's what you want, then that's part of the rule. If you'd rather have, if you will, fewer players, more continuity, let the fans actually be able to recognize who some of the players are instead of trying to know all 40, however many of them, then there's less of that. I think there's arguments on both sides of it.
Bill, what do you think about O'Brien as head coach? What do you think about him as coach?
I mean, I like Billy. Like him, every aspect of him. Well prepared, smart, tough. Has a good understanding of all aspects of the game. He's great to work with. Nothing but positive things about Billy O'Brien.
When you hired him originally, what were you thinking you were getting?
Good football coach.
And when he left, did he seem growth?
Yeah, I mean, we all grow one way or another. No, I mean, more experience, more being in a different system, doing different things. I mean, we all grow. I learned a lot from Billy, and he certainly had a good, strong, positive impact on the New England Patriots. No question.
Thank you.
Bill, I know at the Combine, you hung out a little bit with Greg Schiano. Is he someone who intended as a resource?
I mean, look, I have a lot of friends and people that I talk to in this business, so.
At this point, is it your status?
Well, we certainly have a staff in place. That's what you're asking.
Sort of along the same lines, so what has Michael Lombardi sort of added since you hired him as special assistant to the coaching staff?
Well, you know, Mike has an extensive background in the National Football League. He's done a lot of different things. He's handled a lot of different responsibilities, and we've had him work on different things, and he's done a great job on those.
I don't know if you're ready to commit to this, but the new coaches you have, and then, you know, with Pepper leaving and Dante leaving, tight end, George Godsey leaving, you have a tight end opening, and I think a linebacker opening. Is that, can you tell us who's sliding in there? Is that still to be determined?
We're going to coach the team the way we feel is the most, put the staff together and give them responsibilities that we feel will give us the most productive use of our coaches, staff, and team. So. Oh, yeah, I missed it. Okay, you can Photoshop me in there.
The salary cap obviously is something that's managed year-round, and with the possibility of a credit from any grievance with like an Aaron Hernandez situation? Do you have any expectation on when that might happen, that you guys might get any type of relief if that ruling is in your favor?
I mean, those, you know, we went through a similar thing with the Fenene situation a year ago, and there are rules in place as to how those situations get handled from a timing standpoint. It's not random. It's there's a schedule and, you know, how things get reconciled. So what the whatever the process is, that's what it is. So it's all, you know, it's not a random process. It's reviewed, it's scheduled, and if there's a credit, then there's a process for how it's credited. If there isn't, then there's a process for how it's accounted for. So, you know, comply with the league salary cap rules just like we always do. And whatever they are, they are. Or whatever the results are, they are. I'd say there's a lot of teams that, a lot of players that we've talked to in the last couple of years that's, I don't say common, but certainly more common. Yeah. Learn on the field or just have an assignment that's given to them as opposed to a hearing a play and having an assignment. They just have an assignment. Run a slant, run a go, you know, that type of thing. You know, run, you know, where, you know, run this protection. You know, run 60 protection, run 50 protection, run 70 protection without a route, because that part of it's given independently to those players. Run a go, run an in, run an out, you know, run a bubble screen, run a, you know, whatever it is. And it's given independently to a number of players, you know, maybe four, five, six, seven different components of the play. So, yeah, I'd say that's a lot different than the traditional call play. We all have an assignment. We all go out and run the play. I think that's becoming more and more common in college football. Not sure how extensive that is in the NFL, but I'd say it's becoming more and more common in college football.
Is it challenging to teach guys that you may not understand? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because they haven't done it. I'm not saying they can't do it. It's just in some cases they haven't done it. So you're teaching a player a concept that, okay, we call a play, and then within that play, 11 people know what to do. In a lot of cases, that's not what they're doing now. So, yeah. And I'd say that's a relatively new thing for me. I mean, I haven't seen that, but it's come up more and more in recent, say, the last, you know, 2-3 years, particularly this year more so, that's become more, I don't want to say prevalent, but more common. I'd say 5 years ago, I never heard of that. You know, now that's not, I'm not saying that anymore, and it's just more common. I'm not saying a lot, but it's more than what I thought it was, and it's more extensive. So you just have to understand where the player is coming from, what his background is. It's not the traditional, like I said, hear a play, go out and run your assignment. That's sometimes that's the case, but there's a lot of systems where that's not the case.
We have an intuitive issue in understanding spacing and how wide, you know, receivers understand. We have to keep a certain distance to make sure.
Well, I think the spatial part of football is another concept that's important in the teaching, regardless of how you call plays, doesn't matter, but just the concept of, you know, how far away we are, what combinations, what, you know, what your guy can do to affect me, what I, you know, there's a lot of spatial conceptualization there that when you put a play up on the blackboard, it's different than when you actually walk out on a field and, okay, you're there, I'm here, but no, we need to be a little closer, no, we need to be a little further away, is that's a big element, especially to the passing game, to the running game too, because, you know, trying to crack safeties and, you know, block secondary players and linemen, that kind of thing. But it definitely gets the spatial concept of football is an important element of teaching, both offensively and defensively. I mean, that's a big part of it. I mean, well, again, it's just sometimes different. I mean, look, every guy that comes to our team from another team, our system's a little bit different than somebody else's. It's like anybody that goes from our team to another team is going to be learning a little bit of a different system. I'm not saying you can't learn it. It's just different. And I'm saying conceptually, though, it's a definite difference between, okay, hearing one thing and running a play and hearing another thing and running a play and just hearing your assignment and not getting the concept of the play. Like, that's different. I'm not saying I can't do it. I'm just saying it's different. You know, when you're trying to run plays as fast as you could run them without a huddle, you know, trying to run plays, like, as soon as the play's over, run to the line and run the next play, it's obviously faster to just give the guy assignment rather than call a whole play and trying to communicate the whole play and get everybody to do it. So teams that are running those kind of offenses in college have obviously developed a system that facilitates faster tempo, and that's part of it. So something that we are having to, say, I don't want to say adapt to, but understand that it's different than some of the traditional play calling that we're more familiar with.
Is Chip's offense a good example of how that has come to the NFL?
What's that?
Concepts and getting to the
line. You'd have to ask Chip what concepts he used. I mean, I don't think so, but I don't know. That's a question for Chip.
Have you been in touch much with Rob Gronkowski this offseason? Are you pleased with his progress?
You know, we stay in contact with all of our players all year round, so.
Such an important piece of the offense, obviously.
We stay in touch with all of our players all year round. I don't know any other way to put it. He's seriously asking that question. Focused on the New England Patriots. That's our main focus. Our focus is on trying to make our team better. That's all I can tell you. We can make our team better. That's what we're going to try to do. I mean, I can't sit here and worry about what 31 other teams are doing. There may be some relevant things, but not, like, we're focused on our team. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to look at our opportunities from a personnel standpoint, whether that's free agency or trades or releases or the draft, whether it's our scheme, looking at what we did last year, trying to improve the X's and O's, the teaching, the fundamentals, the strategy. You know, we're obviously going to look at some of the new opponents that we have this year relative to last year in terms of our preparation for them. On a preliminary basis, it's way too early to get in depth, because they're changing the structure of their teams as well, just like we are. So, you know, that's something that really comes more into focus in, I'd say, May, June, that type of area. But there's some preliminary things we can start on now with certain members of our staff. And so that's what we're doing.
In terms of relevant things, have you seen any more shift toward defense in wake of what Seattle winning the Super Bowl was able to do to a team like Denver?
Shift toward defense?
Well, and people emphasizing more defense, stoking up their defenses.
I don't know. No idea.
Coach, you spent a considerable amount of time with Pepper Johnson as if you had him as a player and a coach. Can you talk about his strengths and what type of coach he is, maybe his prospects in the NFL as a coach moving forward?
Well, he's been in the NFL coaching for 15 years. So Pepper's a very experienced coach that you know, has a great history as a player as well as and being able to bring that to the coach. He's actually played the position, played the game at this level. Got a lot of experience. Smart football player, was always a defensive signal caller on the field, and has coached a number of different positions for the Patriots. So I think he has a very extensive knowledge and background and a tremendous passion for the game.
Speaking of defensive game plans, how impressed have you been in what you've seen drawn up over on the Wesleyan women's lacrosse team this year with Coach Belichick locking them down? For real, right?
Yeah. Well, happy for Amanda. And still got a lot of season left, so. But I know she's working hard, proud of the job she's doing.
Do you ever talk, like, on a serious note, X's and O's? I mean, I know you're a huge lacrosse fan. Do you ever, or is it more of a separation there?
I'd say it's more coaching than X's and O's. Yeah. Women's lacrosse is a sport that I have trouble getting a full understanding of. But there's some coaching is coaching. Not completely, but there's some elements of coaching that just plain old coaching. But yeah.
Fun to see.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. Well, she's been doing it for a while, but yeah. As a head coach, sure. Always like to see Wesleyan do well. So, have a vested interest there. So.
Coaches, as someone who is a coach and is a teacher, when you see sort of a former pupil like Coach O'Brien, I'm sure he still looks at you as a sounding board, but I guess do those relationships evolve over time just because obviously there's a willingness to mentor, but then he's now in your conference, there's a competition element as well. How do you sort of balance that?
Well, I think that you know, Coach O'Brien and I have had similar relationships with other coaches. Josh, when he was in Denver, and so forth. Romeo. But, you know, there's kind of a mutual understanding there. There's certain places you can't go, and or sometimes you just say, you know, hey, I got a question. This might be something that I understand if you can't answer it, or I understand if you don't want to talk about it. Something I want to bounce off you, or you know, something like that. And then sometimes you just say, "Look, I'm not comfortable talking about that," or maybe you're comfortable talking about it. I don't know. Depends on what it is and how it relates. But so it depends on what it is, and depends on what your relationship is with that other person.
Cap us off with one final one. You've been doing this for a long time. You know, going through the same process every year. Build a team. Go through the season. Build a team. What keeps you going? Why do you still enjoy it, you know, after all these years of going through this continuous process?
Yeah, I do. I just enjoy it. So I don't know why. I just do. So. Up with you, Tom. Yeah, definitely, sure. Yeah, and Steven was away for 6 years with a year of prep school, 5 years at Rutgers, so you know, be able to see him on pretty much on a daily basis is it's great. It's great. Hope he feels the same way.
But when you're building a roster, how much do you weigh talent versus guys who maybe aren't quite as talented but are better culture fits? And how much of that goes into your thinking when you're assembling the roster?
You know, each player has his own individual makeup. So you have to take each player, try to project him into your system and put some kind of value on it. Each one's different. So I don't think there's any set formula. And it's not this or that, because there's a lot of other things that are part of the package besides just talent or makeup or, you know, I mean, there's a million other things. Experience, intelligence, playing style, on and on and on. So I don't think it's that black and white.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.